Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We are live. We are here right now. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire, bringing you the UFC 298, I believe it is, fight show, breaking down the entire 12-fight slate from Anaheim, California. Being at the top, of course, by the return of Alexander Volkanovski, taking on the most powerful puncher in the division, one of the scariest fighters in the division. It is Ilya Topuria. Co-main event, not quite as exciting. Only one title fight on this card, which I was kind of hoping for two of them, but that's all right. We'll get to everything, including another return of a fan favorite in Robert Whittaker, taking out Paulo Costa, who I'm sure a lot of people didn't think would make it to this card. But for right now, that fight is still on. We do have some news in case you missed it. In the last hour or two, Justin Taffa is out of his fight against Marcos Rogério de Lima, and Junior Taffa, his brother, 5-1 fighter, is in on the fight 1 day's notice to take on Pazau. So let's see if Pazau can manage to screw that up. If anybody could, it would be him. But anyway, before I get too far ahead of myself, I'm going to introduce our panelists here. He is anything but a burden to us here. It is Drake, and of course, you know, Joe Sunzu at the bottom there. And let me kick it to Drake first. Pay-per-view card, I think some of us on the panel maybe like it a bit more than others from a fan perspective. Let's say from a fan and a DK perspective, how do you see UFC 298, and what are your general leans for this card?
I think this is going to be a wildly high-scoring card with the amount of potential finishes that we could have. But overall, I mean, it's really exciting. There's going to be a lot of exciting fights. And, you know, anytime that I get to watch Volkanovski fight, I'm happy.
Yeah, agreed. I like Volkanovski, like him even more, that he's genuinely funny, which you can't say about most MMA fighters, but did put out the that skit with the sports betting company over there. And then carried it on at the press conference, which was also funny. Because I do think Topuria is trying a little too hard in this spot. There's no real drama here. Topuria is trying to make it so. And then Topuria at the press conference said, oh, yeah, get up. And then Volk struggled to get up as if he were an old man, which I thought was very funny. So I'm looking forward to that fight in a number of ways. But what about you, Joe? How are you seeing this card?
Yeah, so we're burying the lead here a bit. And I apologize in advance if I break out into a coughing fit. I am a bit under, but we're going to plow through this. I think Topuria's mouth is writing checks that his fighting ability is not going to be able to cash. I think the recency bias is so overrated. We get a fighter who is routinely 6-1 against the very best in the featherweight division fighting, you know, Topuria, who actually not too long ago got rocked by Jai Herbert, you know, up a weight class, but still got rocked by Jai friggin' Herbert. I love Volk at -125. I don't get the Topuria love. I will own it if this doesn't work out for me, but I don't know how you just can't run to the window with both hands and pray to the MMA betting gods that people are putting money on Topuria and giving you a gift of -125. So I'm going to be betting Volk with both hands. I'm going to be betting him in parlays. I'm going to be betting him straight up. I'm probably going to be betting more money actually in wagers than in than in DFS. Now, I don't know if DraftKings sponsors. I know RotoWire sells data to DraftKings, but DraftKings has got a boost for UFC 298, maximum bet 100. The boost is a parlay boost. It's based on the number of legs in the parlay. I believe a three-fighter parlay is a 20% boost, and it goes up from there. So that's something to take advantage of if you're looking to bet and do a parlay.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we can talk about the main event a little bit here. I was just going to – like, my thoughts are basically – I won't get into technical breakdowns yet, but my thoughts are basically, like, I remember, you know, it wasn't too long ago everybody was analyzing every nook and cranny of Volkanovski film like it was a pruder. Like, oh, look at that footwork. Look at the feints and all this. And now he loses up a weight class to the champion there, and we're already
on 10 days notice. On 10 days notice.
Yeah, on 10 days notice too. And I mean, it doesn't make sense to me either, just from that perspective. There are other technical reasons why I think Volkanovski is the play, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's first say that you can try RotoWire content, www.rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial, no credit card required. Check out my content, Drake's content, all of our content, MLB stuff coming up, all good stuff. And that said, let's just move right onto the card. We have our first fight, and I am not ready. I apologize. Folks, talk amongst yourselves for a minute. I won't give you a topic like
the first fight is KGB Lee against Miranda Maverick.
Thank you so much, Joe. I've got it here. It is Miranda Maverick at 8,900 taking on Andrea Lee at 7,300. Please don't say I didn't just say those salaries, Joe, because I did. Miranda Maverick at -190 and Andrea Lee at +165. Now, from us talking before the show, get the feeling that me and Drake in particular are going to heavily disagree on this one. I like Andrea Lee for one main reason. One is I don't like many underdogs here in general, and I have to pick one. But the other is I get the feeling that Miranda Maverick just isn't great against stronger fighters, physically stronger fighters. We just saw the last fight against Jasmine Judavicius. We saw that fight against Macy Barber, even though people think she won that fight. It was still close enough that she dropped the split decision. I just think if she can't get her takedown game working, she's going to be stuck in space against a better kickboxer, and that's not going to be good for her. And I think the strength advantage is really going to play here. 7,300, I like it a lot. I mean, maybe she gets takedown of her own. Maybe she just gets some clinch control time at the wall install with the significant strikes. I mean, a win here, I can see 82, 84 points easy. That'd be nice at 7,300. I will take it. And so I'm going to go with the underdog first fight of the night. I get the sense that Miranda Maverick still kind of being looked at as, you know, the hype that we saw when she came in. She hasn't always lived up to it. And I think the strength of her opponents is one of the big reasons why. So I'm going with Andrea Lee, kick off the night. I will go to Joe first because I want to save Drake to tell me how wrong I am until the end. I think Joe might have a little more common ground with me on this one. So, Joe, how do you see this fight?
I do. I'm going to play the role of Henry Clay, and you might need to Google that to see who Henry Clay is. But he was known as the peacemaker. I see both sides of this. I don't love the odds on Miranda Maverick. I think KGB is talented. And also, I think due to the inactivity of Jessica Penne, I think KGB Lee has probably got the best ass in women's MMA. That doesn't actually influence my decision as to her fighting ability. I like Maverick to win the fight. However, I would certainly not be surprised if KGB pulled out a decision. And, you know, we saw Maverick get beat by Jasmine Jazdavicius, who is a lot better than maybe people thought. And sad as it may seem, is probably the best Canadian fighter in the UFC. So I'm kind of taking the middle ground here. I'm going to pick Maverick. That'll be my official pick to win. But I would play both sides in DraftKings. And obviously Miranda has got like takedown upside. It's really a salary play for KGB Lee at 7.3K. It opens up a lot of salary, especially if you're playing Nakamura. We'll get to Nakamura at 9.6K. So you're going to have to find somebody in that low 7, high 6K range to play. And I think there are certainly, I think KGB is certainly acceptable in that role.
Yeah, I do want to stress, and I'm not backtracking in the face of what Drake is about to say, but it is primarily a salary play. I'm not looking at this and saying, oh, KGB, you know, one of my stronger plays on the card. But I need dogs here. I don't like very many as a certainty, and Andrea Lee falls into that category. Now, Drake, please go ahead and tell us why I am very, very, very stupid for that pick.
I wouldn't say that you're stupid. Wow. And, you know, I'd say 2 years ago, I probably would have been further on Lee than I was, you know, than I am now. But, you know, she's now 35. She's, you know, she's shortly here going to be 36. She's lost three in a row. She's had quite a few issues in her fights. You could argue that she won the Macy Barber fight, but you could also argue that Miranda Maverick won her Macy Barber fight. And then you look at the other two losses for Maverick. They're both Erin Blanchfield, who's going to be challenging for the title, and an extremely good fighter. So that's a good loss. And then Jasmine Jasudovicius is clearly a much better fighter than everybody thought, because she continues just to power her way through things. So the way that I see it is, if, you know, Andrea is going to win, it's going to be on the feet, and she's going to have to keep Miranda off of her back, which is not always easy to do, because Miranda does like to power her way in there, and she kind of muscles everybody down, aside from Blanchfield and Jasmine. But, you know, in every win that Maverick has, I think she averages right around 100. And at 8,900, I'll take that all day on DraftKings. So I do like her to win this. I do like her to make it, you know, a good fight, and I think she scores well over 100.
Yeah, definitely takedown upside. Absolutely. I mean, there's some takedown upside across this card. She's definitely one of them. But like I said, you know, not many dogs I really love. I'm gonna throw my hat in here, and I always tend to do myself this way on the first fight of the night, so that I either ruin myself or set myself up. And more often than not, it seems ruin myself. But we will move on to the next fight. It is Oban Elliott at 9,300 taking on Val Woodburn at 6,900. Odds on this fight: Oban Elliott -330, Val Woodburn +270, and we have a Herculean task on our hands, Drake, because Joe is indisposed, and we have to try to talk about this fight for as long as we can. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to say. We know Val Woodburn as the guy who filled in as the sacrificial lamb for Bo Nickel, knocked out in under a minute. The UFC likes when guys do them favors like that. So here he is back again for a full camp fight, and good for him. He's powerful. He's explosive. That's about it. I mean, just sort of reckless, sort of dives in. And the other thing too, I think is just very short for this division. He's at a height disadvantage again. That really hurt him against Nickel. I think it's going to hurt him here too. Oban has a long reach. I think he would like look to grapple here more so, but he can, you know, stick out that long jab too. And I don't really see Woodburn doing too much unless he lands one of his big haymakers. But I don't really see it here. I think before anything else, Oban would just take him to the ground. And I actually like Oban in this spot. You can say Val is kind of a wild card because we haven't seen too much from him. But what I saw on the regional scene, plus of course the UFC debut, didn't do much to ingratiate me to him. So, you know, Val Woodburn, I feel like he's gonna burn, no pun intended, a lot of people if he does, you know, spark out here. And look at the debut. Val is not technically a debuting fighter, but it's a debuting fighter versus another one. So anything can happen, but I'm just so not impressed with Val Woodburn, so I got to go with Oban here. And we'll kick it to Drake first on this one. Do you see anything different here, or is that kind of how you're looking at it?
No, you summed it up perfectly. I think it's Woodburn by first round knockout or Elliott by complete and total domination. Woodburn's a low-level fighter. He hasn't done anything spectacular. In his debut, he was knocked out by a non-striker. And I mean, that's really all you really need to know. I mean, Elliott's not much of a striker. He does got a little bit of it. He prefers to, you know, play on the mat. But I think Elliott just dominates this whole fight for as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I might be a little testy in those first few exchanges when they're the freshest. But once he gets past that, I think this is going to go according to plan. What about you, Joe? Are you seeing any big fireworks in the second fighter?
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys happened to be on Twitter today, if you followed the whole camp of Elliott saying how they thought the fight was at 185 and he had to cut 28 pounds in 24 hours. And it was all a big joke. Like, okay. It was all a big joke. And they showed a picture of him, like, lying on the floor with a towel on his face. And then he weighs in at 170.5. So it was all a joke by the, you know, but people were believing it. Like how, like, they were outraged. Like, did they share a brain cell? How does the camp not know what weight the fight's at? I thought that was hilarious. Someone I respect a lot in this industry thinks that Elliott is a fraud. I was looking at taking a shot on Val before I heard that. And that sort of reinforced the fact that, at least in GPPs, I think you stay away from this fight if you're playing cash games. But in GPPs at 6.9K, that just opens so much up. So I'm actually going to take a flyer on the dog here. I don't love this fight, so I'm not saying lock it in. But I think the dog is live here. 6.9K, GPPs, guy who likes, you know, Val to win outright. I respect him a lot. He's been on a good run in 2024. So that kind of reinforced my play on Val. 6.9K.
Yeah, 6.9K. I mean, it goes without saying, GPP only, right? I mean, you're not putting him anywhere else. And, you know, if you want to take that shot, I can see it. We are on a shorter card, especially since from the ones we got lately, there's 12 fights here. So, like, I don't hate it. It's not like Val's going up against a proven product here, but, you know, I don't know how many lineups I'll have Val in out of 100 if I made 100. But, you know, I might take a couple. I might take a couple swings, but that's Obon for me. But I definitely respect the move there. It reminds me of a
Chris,
younger...
Hey, Chris, one real quick point, non-fight related. This is mainly a DraftKings pod. We don't talk about FanDuel all that much. And I just want to let people know that the Micro Millions MMA is the $3 contest this week, where it's 20K on top. I know that different people play different levels, and I know that 600 can be a lot of money to a lot of people. But if you were looking to make an investment in this card for $600, and you know, the good part about playing 150 lineups is you're not going to lose every lineup. You know, you're going to get some of your money back. Like, you know, a friend of mine, you know, Mike Buddha, he does MMA for Roto-Grinders, and he played the Micro Millions version of the NBA last night, and you know, he put 600 in. Actually, it's 450 for MMA. Sorry, it was 600 for and he got 660 back. So, yeah, he didn't hit any of the top prizes, but it was a 10% ROI on one night. And if you're looking to try something, if you're looking to play with mass entry, you know, $450 with 20K on top is not the worst contest to play. So off my soapbox, back to the fights.
Yeah, no, that's a good note there. I feel like we were talking about FanDuel a little more, but when they took away, you know, the takedown defense, they got a lot less interesting. And I kind of stopped playing.
And they can't use real fighter profile picks.
Yeah, no, but I actually like that. It reminds me of like an old NES video game where they have the sprites up there. But all right, let's get on to the next fight here, which is Danny Barlow at 8,700 taking on Josh Quinlan at 7,500. Line on this fight is, they moved it. Barlow minus 220, Quinlan plus 180. And I think this is a really bad spot for Quinlan just because of the immense struggle he had with the reach of Trey Waters in his UFC debut. He really couldn't do anything. Waters was just sticking the jab in his face the whole fight. Had him rocked two or three times, and I think if he was more aggressive with the finish, he could have got it there. Barlow is a more dedicated finisher. 4 out of 7 of the finishes are by knockout. Trey Waters has more, you know, submission spread out there. Barlow is fast. He's powerful. Quinlan's going to have to be leaping into range all night long, and I don't see that ending well for him unless he's fixed a major hole in his game within one fight camp, and I really don't see it happening. So I'm really heavy on Barlow here. I actually like him a lot, and I just think he's going to be too much for Quinlan pretty much anywhere, everywhere rather. So my pick is Danny Barlow, and I believe the first one here is Joe. Joe, what do you think about this one?
Okay, so I have a process, and we appreciate, obviously, you guys, you know, watching this pod for pay-per-view events, and there's a lot of content out there. So I like that when I absorb content provided by other people, I don't like to plagiarize, so I always like to give them props. I heard a great story about Barlow from Cody Safdick, and everybody who doesn't know who Cody Safdick is should not be, you know, wagering on MMA. He does the Dogger Pass podcast with Paul Shaughnessy, and he talks about being in Memphis. And there was a fight card in Tennessee. It was Memphis or Nashville. And he walked into a bar, you know, a fighter's bar. And like Justin Gaethje was there. There was about 100 fighters in this bar. And of course they had one of those, you know, machines where they have the boxing bag and you hit it and it like measures your force. And it, you know, the idea is like to get it over 800. So like, you know, all these fighters were testing this machine, you know, getting it up like maybe as high as like 880, getting it to 800 was pretty hard for like a non-fighter. So Barlow walks into the bar and, you know, again, there's like 100 MMA people in this bar. Barlow walks in the bar and what's his name? Like the left hand of God or something like that. He takes no warm-ups, and his first shot with his left hand, he hits it at 960. Wow. Like all these other MMA guys, like they're taking multiple shots, they're warming up, you know, they're getting like in the high eights. He does 960 with his left hand. Now, I love narrative, right or wrong. Sometimes it works for me. Sometimes it buries me. I love narrative. When I heard that story and knowing that he's coming into this fight off of full camp and knowing that his opponent isn't all that good, I actually love Barlow in this spot. He's probably my third or fourth favorite bet on the card. I like him in DFS. I like him as a bet. I like him as a parlay piece. Yeah, give me all the Barlow I can get here, and I'm going to be very underweight to his opponent.
Yeah, left hand to God with the two as a numeral there. How about you, Drake? What are you seeing in this one?
Well, the more that I keep hearing and reading about Danny Barlow, the more that I want to go with him. I had Quinlan going into this. I have Quinlan in my article. I have Quinlan in my podcast that I do with my buddy. And the whole reason to that is Quinlan obviously has a huge advantage on the mat. So if he gets it there, you know, that's where he's going to, you know, to make his money. And I'm going to stick with him. I'm going to, you know, he was 1-for-8 against Waters in the, you know, the takedown department. Barlow's takedown defense is questionable. We haven't really seen it a whole lot. So it's really hard to know, you know, what he's going to do when he's got someone pushing forward like that. Obviously, the reach is going to be an issue again. I have to imagine that Quinlan has spent the majority of his camp working on that, considering that was his problem in the last fight. And he's now, you know, at a 9-inch reach disadvantage or whatever it is. So don't get me wrong. Barlow by knockout is very likely, but I'm going to stick with Quinlan. I like Quinlan to get this to the mat. And if he does, you know, we could be seeing a submission from his side.
Yeah, definitely. Something we should mention that, you know, if he gets the fight to the ground, like you say, untested on the ground, or at least we haven't seen it. So definitely could be interesting there.
Hey, Drake, right, why don't you real quick, Drake, you do pods for all the events, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you just let people know when, you know, like if you guys want a pod, we only do pay-per-views, but Drake hits all the events up. I've listened to a couple of them. He does a really good job. Like tell the audience, like, you know, when you typically do the pods.
So we typically, me and my buddy Joey, we typically do them on Thursday nights. Today we happen to do it this morning, really early. Almost always uploaded at least, you know, late Thursday night, Friday morning. We go by It's Time Picks. You can find us just about everywhere. But yeah, we always do, you know, what we can with our YouTube show. And then we go through every fight in a DFS and, you know, betting type of thing.
So if Joey ever has any hot takes, we should have him come on and break down a couple fights. He would
love to.
Yeah. Let's like next time he has like a real hot take, and it could be a parlay. It could be a fight. Like we should have him come on and break down a couple fights.
Yeah,
that's cool, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
We, More than
sorry, for the, sorry for the divergence here, but like I thought that people should know that you can get RotoWire content in non-pay-per-view weeks, you know,
those are your good drop-ins. The ones about like Vasily matches and stuff, not so much, but those are the ones that we like. So I have no problem with it. Thank you for that, Joe. Now on to the next fight. It is Jinmin Yang at 8,400 taking on Brenson Ribeiro at 7,800. The line on this fight, Zhang is at minus 127, Ribeiro at plus 107. And what do you say about this fight? Wrote the UFC fighter versus contender series guy. Not really looking forward to either one of them that much. If you saw Zhang's fights on the road to the UFC, he's basically just a brawler, big light heavyweight brawler. Ribeiro is, I would say, the more athletic guy. He's got the better footwork, but he's also hittable. And so basically what I would say is this is big guy fall down, go boom fight. One of these guys is going to get knocked out, and you got to have one in your lineup, total GPP. Pick one if you dare, leave the other one out at your own discretion. I'm going with Ribeiro just because I think he's actually got like some attributes, like I said, athleticism and a little bit of footwork and the ability to counter a little bit, whereas Zhang is just going to push forward and just throw in these really wild exchanges and sort of just hope that he can outlast his opponent, which, I mean, he might be able to do here, but he won't be able to do it for very long. So I don't expect to see either one of these guys for very long. But for this matchup, I'm just going with Ribeiro and kind of closing my eyes and crossing my fingers and just taking who I see as the more skilled fighter in a matchup of two guys who are just going to get in there and swing. And Drake, do you see any intricate skill in this one, or are you kind of leaning the same way?
It's no doubt, a pure GPP, and one of them is for sure going down. I am on the opposite side, though. I've got Zhang, and what really settled me on it is if you go and look at their fights, Zhang is actually more accurate than Ribeiro is. And if Ribeiro is hesitant in that first round, because Zhang's a first round fighter, he's first round or bust, we're going to see his, lights get knocked. So I like Zhang in this one, probably slightly more than most people. I know there's going to be a lot of people in Ribeiro it's going to be a high owned fight either way. But I like Zhang. I think he has the better speed. They both have good power, but the accuracy from Zhang, I think, is what seals it.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the first round just being the quick start and spark him out. But otherwise, I don't know. Like, he just walks forward with the chin up a little too much for me. But I can see it either way. Like you said, you have to be on both sides. Joe, you get anything else to say on this one, or can we?
Yeah, I'm obviously going to break the tie here, and I'm glad that, I didn't really put a lot of time into this fight, and I hate that I actually have to play this in GPPs because of the finish upside. I am going to stick with my initial pick of Ribeiro, but it's with very little confidence, and given Drake's analysis, I'm probably going to play more Zhang than I would have played, simply because obviously it seems to me that, at least I don't want to speak for you, Chris, but like at least based on what I know about this fight, Drake seems to have a better sense of how it's going to go, and he seems to put more time into it than I have. So, I definitely am going to play some more Zhang than I would have in the past, but I'm going to stick with Ribeiro as a pick.
Yeah, I mean, hard to have high confidence. Basically, just pick your favorite flavor and go with it and see how it goes. We have a couple of those kind of fights on this card, but an interesting prospect coming up here in Rinya Nakamura at 9,600, taking on Carlos Vera at 6,600. The line on this fight is, where are we? We are not in order. Rinya Nakamura is minus 1,400, and Vera coming back at plus 800. I mean, those odds might suggest that there's not too much to talk about.
Do we have to really spend a lot of time on this fight?
No, we don't.
Vera's a trash can. Let's just leave it there.
I'm going to take him down and over and over again, and that's going to be the end of it. I did want to share a funny anecdote of like a weird-looking fight that I saw of Vera's, where like his opponent put himself inside a choke. It was very, it was bizarre. But in any case, Rini Nakamura for the win. 9,600 prohibitive, but you know, a couple takedown in the first round finish could cover it. But 9,600 is still a lot of money. But the pick is obviously Nakamura. And Drake, I know you've been studying this fight all week. You know, looking at it from all different angles. Really, the gem loop got it out. And so, what is your take on this one?
You know, before I say that, you know, now that you say that, just real quick here, I actually do go into all of these fights and I break down everything, every little piece of fighter. That's why I'm on a lot of dogs more often than a lot of people, because the things that I look at and the things that I see, it's just, you know, it's paths that people can, you know, that these fighters have, that, you know, the weaknesses that they share and, you know, just things like that. So I go deep into this stuff and, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, for this one, Nakamura, I mean, Vera, he's 36 making his debut. He hasn't done much of anything. He hasn't really fought anybody. Nakamura is, you know, one of the top prospect coming up. And he is amazing. He is such a complete fighter. I fully expect him just to, I mean, well, first round and done.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, add to the pylon, if you would.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think it's a question of who's going to win. I think it's more a question of, you know, to play or not to play. I mean, if we're thinking that this card is going to be rife with finishes, 9.6K, you really do need a first-round finish. And you know, if not, like, inside the first minute, you know, or you know, a lot of ground control, number of takedowns and knockdown. You know, I mean, obviously it's a cash lock. I mean, but everybody is going to play him, so it's almost like a wash in cash. So, you know, you could build like, you know, half your cash lineup by stacking the main and then putting Nakamura in, and then you figure out what to do with the rest of your salary, which I think a lot of people are going to do, by the way. So that's the big question here, is to play him or not to play him. I would certainly, I'm not sure what ownership projections are, but I would probably be at ownership, maybe a slightly under ownership. Just because I agree with Drake, I think there's going to be a lot of finishes and a lot of high scores, and 9.6K is mighty expensive.
Yeah, it's a good point, especially on a high finish card. You really need to invest all that salary. But like you said, Joe, I think that is the only consideration in that spot. Not so much who is going to win. Okay, now we have our change that I talked about at the top. It is Marcos Rogera de Lima at 8,500 taking on now Junior Taffa at 7,600, the brother of Justin Taffa. And the line on that fight is Rogera de Lima at -210, Junior Taffa at +180. And my breakdown of this fight previously was just like, every time I project Rogério de Lima to win, it's never with a lot of confidence. He's the ultimate glass cannon. He never does as well as you think he's going to do in his best matchups, and in his worst matchups, he just gets knocked out immediately. So it's hard, but, you know, coming from that light heavyweight, he did retain all that speed, and he still has it. And I like that, and I like the wrestling and the grappling. I have to take that here against Junior Taffa, who did a good job stuffing takedowns against Muhammad Usman, but I mean, once he got to the floor, it was 12 minutes of total control time. And, you know, I think Rogério de Lima is, I think, too good of a jiu-jitsu player from top to let him survive on the ground for 12 minutes if it gets there. So you got to pick Pizzau, especially on a day's notice, everything that's going on. Like I said, if anybody could mess this up, it's Pizzau, because he tends to lose in wondrous and exciting ways, but you can't do anything else here. You just have to go ahead and pick Pizzau. If you want to get really bold and GPP flyer, because it is him, and these guys are a boxing family with a boxing, you know, background, that's fine. I won't be doing that. I'm going with Pizzau. And Joe, is there anything different here, or how are you playing this with the card shakeup and the?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I immediately heard in a couple discords that I peruse that everybody's now thinking that De Lima is a free square on DraftKings. I don't know if I would go that far to say that De Lima is a free square, because, you know, he finds a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. That's kind of his MO. And honestly, Taffa has got to be loose as a goose going into this fight. Like, he's doing the UFC a favor. He has trained with his brother, so it's not like he's like coming off the couch, right? He's been training with his brother. He's obviously, you know, in Anaheim, you know, that, you know, so like he's got nothing to lose here. So I am going to have a few shares of him. I don't think De Lima is quite that lock, but it also would not surprise me if he's not now going to be one of the highest, if not the highest owned fighter on the slate at his, what did we give the salaries, Chris?
We did. Should I give them again?
Please, for my benefit.
Ah, yes, sir. It is De Lima at 8,500 and Junior Taffa at 7,600.
Yeah, so at 8,500, he's currently, what, minus 198, minus 200. I think like he's going to be really popular. So, and that line might go up. So, yeah, I don't think he's the free square. Watch out for ownership. If you really want to be contrarian, go under market for ownership on De Lima and go up ownership for Taffa. And then if Taffa just comes in really loose and catches him with something, you're going to be really happy in GPPs. But official pick is De Lima.
I think Will there, you brought up a good point that I put on the screen earlier. These guys are brothers, so they're going to know what's going on with each other. So if Justin Taffa is hurt, and I hadn't considered this, if Justin Taffa is hurt, Junior's going to know about it, and I doubt they're going to be contacting him literally for the first time the day of, like they would with some other fighter. You know, he's probably going to have more intimate knowledge than your average fighter would be. I don't know how much that sways my decision ultimately, but I do think it's something interesting to think about, if nothing else. Drake, how do you see this?
So to add on to that, Taffa is actually scheduled to fight next month, his brother, Junior. So I'm not quite sure that that is the case. I don't know how many people look ahead, but yeah, he's scheduled to fight next month at the Apex. I think it's March 23rd. So I wouldn't look into that too much, but you can for sure know that he's at least somewhat fresh because his fight camp would have started already. That said, De Lima got knocked out by Derek Lewis, obviously, last fight. It was immediate. It was, you know, 33 seconds into the fight. That was the first time he had been knocked out since 2012. All the rest of his finish losses have come by submission, and I don't see Taffa submitting him, and I actually don't see him knocking him out in this one. I did have Justin Taffa by knockout because I trust his brother a little more than Junior. I don't think Junior is as polished, and he is definitely does not have the takedown defense that his brother has. So this is going to be De Lima walking forward, put him down, submit him. It's probably going to be quick.
Yeah, no, I agree. I you know, but I don't trust Pizarro to go to a wrestling game plan either. I mean, he has sparingly, but I don't know. I think maybe, but I think even slugging it out, I agree, he probably would still have the edge, but
well, you say that, but then if you look at the fight before Lewis against Cortez Acosta, Cortez Acosta is a pure striker, and De Lima went to the well, and he scored three takedowns in that fight. I fully expect it to be much like that, except I don't think Taffa does anywhere near as well as Acosta did.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a good point, and that was the fight I was thinking of, and it is the one time, and like you said, it is the pure striker, so we can expect that he would go back there again. So Pizarro, but Pizarro. Next fight is Amanda Lemos at 8,300 taking on Mackenzie Dern at 7,900. Line on this fight, Amanda Lemos at minus 120, Mackenzie Dern at plus 102. And I'm really mad at Mackenzie Dern because her entire career, I have picked against Mackenzie Dern. Every fight. I don't like her. She doesn't get takedowns. She doesn't have striking. Every fight. I went against it against the Andrade fight because Andrade had just been so reckless lately. Andrade found a little bit of control and a little bit of patience, and that's all she needed. It was just the bloodbath that we knew it could be if Andrade performed optimally, but we didn't know that she would. And now she gets another sort of athletic, kind of tie striker, also physically strong, also lost to Andrade with that submission, that standing arm triangle choke. So that is kind of because Mackenzie Dern does look for tie ups and things. I think that's kind of more of a fluke than anything. And I might be flopping back and forth between Dern for a few fights until she shows me other stuff, because I know you can't get too much off of one performance, but she just looked so bad. And we are getting to the higher level strikers now. And the takedowns have never been that good. The striking has never been that good. It looked a little better for one fight and then regressed again. So I have to go with Lemos here. I don't see Dern. You know, what I will say about Dern is she gets at least one or two opportunities per fight. It's just a matter of what she does with them. And as in the Andrade fight especially, she was rushing when she got those clinch situations. So I don't know if she was nervous or what. But, I mean, if she rushes again, these fighters now they're not as good at jiu-jitsu as Mackenzie Dern are, but they're good enough to, you know, get back to their feet if you rush or you don't take your time on a position. So I have to go with Lemos here. Dern could make me look foolish, but I'm back off the Dern train for a while, and it feels good. Joe, how are you seeing this fight?
Yeah, so I think the biggest debate about Mackenzie Dern is she or isn't she hot? I happen to be on the is side, but I got
that,
burned.
That's our next pod, by the way.
I got burned by Dern. That actually rhymes, burned by Dern. I got burned by Dern badly in her last fight. And what I didn't know, and I think it's worth bringing up here, is being such a narrative guy as I am, I did not know that she either had fired or did not train with Jason Perillo, her striking coach, for that fight. She had looked so good the prior fight, like being more well-rounded. Her stand-up looked so much better. Her striking looked so much cleaner. And she totally regressed. And I didn't find out till during the fight that Jason Perillo was not with her for that card. And she looked horrendous. She looked sloppy. Her dad was screaming at her in Portuguese. I mean, it was just an absolute mess. I don't understand the line here. I mean, Lemos, yes, I get that she's older. But she's such a much more rounded fighter than Dern is. Now, it worries me that someone is seeing something that maybe I'm missing. You know, Dern is plus 110. I don't know that she needs the money. Maybe she does. I've been seeing her with some other guy. I know she's paying for a divorce. Maybe that's it. But at plus 110, I don't necessarily get it. I think she's going to be played because plus 110 at what, Chris? 7.9K. Yeah. I think she's going to be played. I think, look, if it's really simple. If Lemos can keep this fight standing, she wins hands down. I don't see any way that Dern could win this fight unless she gets it to the ground. And even if she gets it to the ground, she's got to sink the sub in, right? Like, I think that's how Dern wins this fight. And can she do it? Absolutely. You know, she doesn't have wrestling takedowns. She has jiu-jitsu takedowns. She looks to do sweeps, you know, trips, that type of stuff. So I'll have a couple shares of Dern in case she does manage to get this down to the ground. But I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I don't know why this line isn't wider. Sometimes you see lines in there too wide. Like, I don't think this line is wide enough. I don't really understand it. And when I don't understand it, it really concerns me because I really don't think that much of myself or I know that much more than everybody else who's betting on this fight. But I'm going to have to pick Lemos here. I'll have some shares of Dern for salary relief and for the chance that she actually gets the sub. Also, if you're looking, I don't know what the sub prop is on this fight, but if you're looking at maybe to bet this fight, you take Dern by sub, you know, take a little sprinkle there, you know, but I'll pick Lemos, and I'm really confused at the line.
Yeah. I share the same trepidation every time there's a fight that I think should be lined a little further away and it's that close. I go, well, what's going on here? Am I just about to get really burned here? I always let those thoughts creep in. Ultimately, I do what I want, and it turns out being wrong most of the time. Drake, how about you? How do you see this one between the Submaster and Amanda Lemos?
This one hurt because this will be the first fight that I go against Dern.
Welcome to the dark side.
But I am. And one is she's taking this fight on somewhat short notice because Suarez was supposed to fight Lemos. And had that been the fight, we would see Suarez probably at 9,700 on DraftKings because this fight would have just been a cakewalk. Now, you go to Lemos's last fight, she got her ass kicked against the champ. And you go to Dern's last fight, she got her ass kicked against Andrade. The difference is that Lemos can probably take a much better punch than Dern can, and she can dish it definitely better than Dern can. So, I mean, it's like you both said, it's Dern by submission or Lemos by any other way. And I just, there's a lot of concern with Dern on her side because, one, she was knocked down four times in that fight. That's a huge red flag. It wasn't that long ago. It's less than 6 months ago, I'm pretty sure. Let's see. Yeah, it was back in November. So, I mean, she's had hardly any time to recover from that. She's got all sorts of going on in her personal life. And it's not anything that I'd want to, you know, even try to fight with. So I got Lemos by knockout.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and it was hard to go by knockout because she hasn't been getting knocked out. But I think, I mean, you know, sometimes it only takes a little one fight for the dam to break. And I consider the dam to be broken until further notice. All right, that brings us to the next fight, which is Alexander Fluffy Hernandez at 8,800 taking on Roman Kopylov at 7,400. Line on this fight. Let's get there since I was looking at props. The line on this fight is Hernandez at minus 240, Kopylov at plus 205. And I know people are looking at Kopylov here because they see the really good takedown defense, 92%, I believe. But none of those guys are against really committed or dogged or, I would say, skilled wrestlers. Anthony Hernandez is one of these guys who does the MMA meta of making the fight cardio-based. And one of the big ways he does that is wrestling. He will go and go and go. And Kopylov is more of a flat-footed kickboxer. I think Hernandez is going to wear on him. He might fail initially. He might fail in the first round, but eventually I think he's going to get there. And at a salary under 9,000, it's going to pay off. If he even does, if he has to pick it up in round two and start there, he's still going to pay off at that salary. So I love the motor of Hernandez here. I believe at least 116 DraftKings points in each of his last three fights. I mean, it's just, it's too much. It's too much not to go with here. In any case, Kopylov, I don't think he's going to be able to withstand the barrage. And so I got to take Fluffy Hernandez in this one. And I believe we start with Joe. Joe, how do you see it?
Yeah, I love me some Fluffy here. He uses cardio as a weapon, like, you know, like our friend Marab, who's coming up. And I mean, as a purple belt, he submitted a fighter who is nicknamed the Black Belt Collector in jiu-jitsu. Like, I never thought I'd see the day. And it was purely based on cardio and him having worn down his opponent. I like him here. Look, I think Kopylov is good, and I'm going to have a few shares of him, but I really like Fluffy. This is like one of my top bets. It's a parlay piece. Definitely tying him up with Volk and Marab. Yeah, I mean, give me Hernandez here. I think this is a good matchup for him. I think he can get it to the ground. I think he can, you know, get a lot of ground control time. And if he wears down Kopylov, maybe even get a late finish. But I definitely like Fluffy here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just have to say one thing, because I don't like when people bring up that submission. I mean, yeah, he did it, and the guy is who he is, but he was so tired, I give myself a 50-50 shot of being able to sub him at that particular time. So I don't know if that is exactly the feather in the cap that a lot of people make it out to be, but, you know, a good win is a good win, and I do like him here as well. Drake, what about it? How are you seeing this fight?
I am heavily favored towards Fluffy.
Yes.
There's a number of reasons for that. I'm going to dig in a little deeper here. Obviously, six fights in the UFC for Kopylov. Those first four wins all by knockout, rounds two and three. They're all against primary brawlers, people that like to get in his face, people that like to fight in the pocket. Go to the first two fights he had in the UFC with Roberson and Duraev. Well, that changes the game a little bit. There is a wrestling threat in that, you know, in that fight. And if you watch prior to the UFC, Kopylov, anytime he faces a wrestler or a grappler or somebody that's strong in that, he tends to fight slower. That should deter pretty much everybody from any type of DFS for Kopylov, because that's just going to lead to an insanely low score. That said, he is also not the greatest at takedown defense. Yes, he has a 92%. Well, he hasn't faced a grappler yet, at least not really. So this is going to be a huge test for him, but I fully expect Fluffy to chain takedown. It's going to be the same thing with our boy Murad Walashvili in the next fight. And these are two guys, you know, that I love for DFS and betting for that matter.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's got to be one of your pillars along with, as you say, coming up next, but we will get to that. But before we get to that, we are going to take a short break for our audio only podcast listeners. And we're back. I hope everybody enjoyed their break, freshened up, because we are progressing on and we are on the main card. And it is, as Drake alluded to, Murad Walashvili at 8,600 taking on Henry Cejudo at 7,600. The betting line on this fight, Murad at -260, Henry Cejudo +220. There's a lot of things to dig into here. I'll let Joe get in on the bulk of the narrative with Henry saying if he loses this fight, he's going to retire. And what that might mean, what I would like to say is that, you know, Henry Cejudo, I believe, was taken down once in his UFC career before his last fight with Aljamain Sterling, who then took him down four times. And I think the reason for that, he was way more stationary than we've seen him in the before. Like when Henry Cejudo got on that run right before he beat DJ and beyond, what really marked it was like the karate style that he used. He was up on his toes. He was bouncing. He was quick. He was very flat-footed in that fight against Aljamain, and I just don't like it. I think that Walashvili is just going to put a pace on him. He's just going to outwork him. It is true that Aljamain had to work hard. I believe he had to do 12 or 13 takedown attempts, but we've seen Walashvili do 30 or 40 and not even get tired, literally. So that's not much of an issue. I just don't see what Henry's going to be able to do to him. I think that eventually he's going to wear Cejudo down, get those takedowns. We haven't really seen Cejudo off his back. A lot of high wrestlers are not great off their backs because they never get put there. He's going to see it now. I don't think he's going to be able to do much with it. I expect this to be much more of a classic Murad performance than something you saw with, say, Jose Aldo, where he couldn't take him down and I believe scored like 78 points. I believe this gets way more into the 100 and beyond range. And I actually really like it. And I think it's going to be curtains for our friend Henry Cejudo if he is indeed serious about retiring after this fight. But I'll kick it over to the boys here. Drake, how you seeing this one?
Nope. Walashvili is another fighter that I have been on since he debuted in the UFC. I've been on him every fight, and I will continue to stay on him. I fully expect him to have the belt after, you know, his next fight. On the Cejudo side of things, you know, I don't like that R word. I know a lot of people don't like it. Anytime retirement comes up, it puts a lot of question marks out there. There's also speculation that Cejudo is hurt. It's not confirmed, but there is a lot of speculation about it, which worries a lot of people. If he is, then, well, more cause for concern there. But I like Walashvili a lot. He scores so well. I mean, two of his last, I think, three fights, he's had almost 170. And it should just be more of the same here. I don't know how Cejudo is going to deal with the pressure from Walashvili. It's his cardio is insane, and it's just going to be constantly in his face.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I do, like I said, I do think this is a diminished Cejudo. I did see those hurt rumors. I don't know how credible they were. I'm not calling anybody who said them. Less reputable, just that I didn't know who those people were, so it's hard for me to, you know, sort of take their word on it. But either way, I do think Cejudo is in for a bad time here. Joe, showing the love here, anytime, buddy.
Yeah, first and foremost, though, Chris. How would you be okay with having two Joes on the same pod? I mean,
well, I might just call you Sun Tzu, or we haven't.
Yeah, called call you me Sun Tzu. Hey, Drake, you know this guy. You know Joe. Is he 100% Italian? I'm guessing by his last name that he's Italian.
He is a lot of things.
Oh, okay. But he's partially Italian at least, right?
I think so.
Okay, so that's another thing we have in common.
Where are you going with that?
I'm half okay. Italian. I mean, I assume he's two Joes Italian. I mean, you know, there's a lot. Okay. So anyway, back to the fight. I have to say my favorite fight. Now, was this in 2023? I can't even remember. My favorite fight to watch in a long time was the Merab Yan fight. I mean, just to watch someone win a fight by using cardio as a weapon. And you could just see the way that Yan deflated after Merab kept coming and coming and coming. Now, I don't know if this is going to be like a $150, $160 Merab performance. I don't know that we're going to see that here. But I do think, because I do think that Cejudo will be tough at least early on. And remember, this is only a 3-round fight, right? So I do see Merab winning the fight. I like him a lot. I love him as a bet. I wish he was the DraftKings salaries were a little narrower, but I think everybody is seeing what we're seeing here, and you know, looking at Merab as a future champ, you know, in the weight class. So I really do think that you know, I really do like this fight a lot. I'm going with Merab. My only caution is that if you play Merab thinking he's going to put up 150, I don't know that I see that. I mean, it would be great because I'm going to be heavy to Merab, but I think I would manage my expectations a little better, and he is higher priced. Look, if you could get 12, 13X, be happy. So, yeah, give me Merab. I'll have a few shares of Cejudo just in case, but I don't expect to be much to market on whatever the ownership is on Cejudo.
Yeah, I think there's really only one way to go. I mean, the only time we've ever seen Merab in trouble was a puncher, and unless you're counting that Simone fight where he was just kind of out-scrambled, and then he knocked himself out, which I don't think a lot of people know. He knocked himself out before he was put in that choke, and that sort of led to it. So, I'm heavy on the volatility here, too. I don't really see what Cejudo can do, and that, I think, is the long and short of that one.
One more quick thing to add. With Cejudo, you know, I think one of it, you brought up the whole flat footed thing, and I don't think it's going to be any difference here. Him coming back after nearly 3 years off or whatever it was, I mean, those 3 years were huge, and he fought well against Sterling. There's you know, no doubt in my mind that he could still have good fights, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, wins against the highest level in the, you know, in the division.
Right. Yeah. And he's one of those guys who he either wants that or bust. And so I think it has to be bust from here on out, but we'll see. Moving on down the main card. It is Ian Garry at 9,100 taking on Jeff Neal at 7,100. Line on this fight, Ian Garry -250, Jeff Neal +210. And you know, I almost got to a point this week where people were making me feel guilty for picking Jeff Neal because it was like, oh, what, you just hate Ian Garry? Well, no, I just like Jeff Neal. I always have, actually. I don't know if you remember, but Joe, do you remember when you and Brett, remember when you guys were doing the Patreon thing for a little while?
Yep.
You asked the question, who was going to be the next welterweight champion? I guess you guys read out questions. And I said Jeff Neal, and this was months and months and months ago. And actually, he had a bad loss after that, and I was kind of iffy on my pick. I am now fully back on it. I love Jeff Neal. I love his speed. I love his pressure. I love how he mixes his targets, and I love how he can hang in there. Like, he really put on a good showing against Shavkat. Shavkat ultimately picked him apart. We know the story, but I really think he landed some good shots in there, and I think he beats a lot of fighters that night. He just doesn't beat Shavkat because I think Shavkat is going to be something special. And he's got some work to do to catch up to him. But I really like Jeff Neal. I really like the speed. And again, I like the weapons. Ian Garry, I don't think he's a Joe. I think there's been a bit of overcorrection on Ian Garry because I think when he first came in, people were like, oh, what's this? He's a joke. Blah, blah. Let's see him do that. Now he's cleared a few hurdles. And it's clear that he can fight. And it's clear that he's tough. And it's clear that he uses that range well. And all of that is all well and good. But I just like Neal's pressure more, and I don't think Neal's going to quit. And I think that, look, we've seen Ian Garry get hit hard before, and Jeff Neal, when he is in that finishing position, he finishes. And I think that's going to be the case here. So for the salary especially, I have to take Jeff Neal. I think this is going to be a great fight, one of my favorites of the card, of course, precluding the main event, but I have to take Neil on this one. And I believe we are going to Drake first. Drake, how are you seeing this fight?
Before I get into mine, I will say that Joey's lock of the week, because we do a lock dog on our show, his lock is Jeff Neal. So,
all right, Joey,
I was on Jeff Neal at the beginning of the week. I actually was on Jeff Neal until yesterday. And I switched my pick after watching a bunch of tape on Neal. And there's a lot of worries and concern for me going against Gary, primarily due to his range, his kicks, and just the overall fighting style of Gary. Yes, Neal did look good against Shavkat. He obviously looked very good against Luque. I think he's going to have a lot of problem with Gary's range in this fight. And that was really what swayed me into picking Gary. I don't really like this from a DFS perspective. I'd much rather go with Neal for DFS, but I will side with Gary to get the win.
Yeah, the range is going to be an issue. And I have to say, he uses it better than I thought in subsequent fights. When he first came on, I was like, you know, is he kind of just this tall man defense guy? Is he more James Vick than? But no, he uses range really well and definitely has some power. So it definitely, I'm not without concern, but still do like the hands of steel. Joe, how you see this fight?
Yeah, so I just found out in our private chat that Drake's partner Joey is also from New Jersey, which is a surprise to me. If you're still watching, dude, like, tell me where in New Jersey. We got to get together and watch some fights, man.
All the East Coast boys.
Yeah, I'm going. I live in Oakland, by the way. I'm going with Neal here. I'm going to take a flyer on Neal. You know, first and foremost, you know, it seems like Gary is more of a social media guy, and should focus more on fighting. And let's be honest, like, I don't care that his wife is older than him. She is a smoke show. I mean, she could be older than him. I could care less about that. But I, you know, he like had the shirts printed up with, you know, with Neil's mugshot on it and, you know, like all this stuff. I think Neal has fought better competition. He has a win over Bilal Muhammad, actually going back a couple of years, but he does have a win against Bilal. I think he's fought better competition in his career. I think this is a pretty decent spot for him. I understand Drake's concerns. And I wouldn't go as far to call him the lock, my lock of the week. But, you know, if you're looking for a few dogs to play, he is the third least expensive fighter on DraftKings. And you can really, really, really build some great lineups when you're starting with 7.1K. Like, you could really, like, I was just playing around while Drake was speaking. I did hear you, Drake. I was playing around building some lineups, and I'm like, holy cow, like I could really build some nice lineups using Jeff Neal as an anchor. There's so many different ways I can go. So I expect to be very liberally exposed to Jeff Neal. I'm going to be above ownership because there's not many dogs that I think have a legitimate chance on this card. And this is one that I think does. I also like Val Woodburn at 6.9K, and I think he looked really good at weigh-ins, by the way. So I like a couple dogs, like really at the lower end of the spectrum, not so much the dogs in the middle, which is kind of surprising to me. So you could build some really nice lineups at 7.1K. So I'm going to take a shot with Neal as well.
Yeah. And I think that's important, but not only the salary, but the option to really do something with that salary. Like I picked Andrea Lee at 7.3K, but she doesn't have like a 90, 95 point upside. We understand that. Jeff Neal could, you know, he could go in there, really throw some strikes, get a knockout, and really break the slate. So that's definitely a point in Neal's favor there. All right, moving on to the co-main event. It is Robert Whittaker at 9,000 taking on Paulo. Why don't they call me Barracini anymore? Costa at 7,200. The line on this fight, it is Robert Whittaker at -230. Paulo Costa at +190. And let's just take a few minutes of celebration that Paulo Costa has not, I repeat, has not pulled out of the fight yet. He is fighting tomorrow, as far as we know. I look pretty good on the scale, if I do say so. And I'm picking him here. And I'm picking him here because I don't like the fact that a guy like Whitaker can just go out and get truck. And I know that Drake likes him and maybe he expects it, but I don't like that he can just go out there and get trucked by a guy like Dricus du Plessis. I think the time off affected him. He hasn't been super active in any case after that fight. And Paulo Costa is a guy who's going to come after you. And he's going to come after you with big strikes. And if Whitaker's not that guy anymore, if he doesn't have his distance management, if he's not ready for the onslaught, then I think he's really going to get hurt here. I don't think Paulo Costa is going to give him the time to play with range and sort of like find it like he did in the Marvin Vettori fight. I think he's just going to come after him. And I think he's got a good shot to knock him out again. This might signal, if I'm correct, might signal the beginning of the end for Robert Whitaker. Maybe. I don't know what that means because I would like Paulo Costa to be a little more active. He just called for a title shot if he wins and everybody's getting crazy. But in any case, I like the power of Costa a lot. I've always liked Costa. I mean, I know he froze up a little bit against Izzy and then got stopped in, you know, kind of a bad fashion. But if he fights how he should fight, then I really think he's got a chance for a knockout here. So my pick is Costa, and we're going to start with Joe first because Drake is shaking his head and I want to let him stew over there for a little while longer. So we will start with Joe first. Joe, how you seeing this one?
Yeah. So Costa, a lot of people don't know, has a really lucrative endorsement deal with the Catholic Church. You know, going to be a poster boy for the Rhythm Method due to all the times he's pulled out of fights. I was kind of thinking that, you know, he would pull out again and get that, you know, solidify that endorsement deal. I have to be honest, I was not at all impressed with how Costa looked against the ghost of Luke Rockhold. Like the fact that he could not put Luke Rockhold away and then having all these issues that caused him to be a poster boy for the Rhythm Method. I don't know, man. I think this is a test for Whitaker, right? This is the line of demarcation for Robert Whitaker. If he can't get through a guy like Costa, then I think it's time he hangs it up. Or maybe goes to PFL and tries to win $1 million. I don't know. I'm definitely on Whitaker here, but in all honesty, it's not a fight that I love to play on DraftKings because I could see it actually going to decision. And if it goes to decision, like, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of scoring. Now, I would love to see Whitaker put on his singlet here and go out and wrestle and not subject himself to Costa's power. And then if he does that, he can score, right? But I don't know. I don't know how – I'm not going to have a ton of this fight in DraftKings, but I'm definitely picking Whitaker.
All right, there's a couple things I would say about the Rockhold fight. First of all, it's just a different fight. I mean, you could say, yeah, it's Rockhold and he's chinny, you should knock him out. But the body kicks, which Rockhold has always had good body kicks, were really giving him trouble. He's not going to have to face that kind of rangy kicking game here. And that was kind of an end of a period where it was like, well, maybe the guy's going to just retire. And then all of a sudden he had this fight. Here I think he's actually preparing for this. I think he's going to be ready. That's just speculation on my part, of course. But we'll turn it to Drake for the definitive answer here. How are you seeing this fight?
I think that Costa gets made a fool. So I also do not like this fight much for DFS purposes, but I love it for betting. One second. Whitaker always fights very smart. And if you can remember back to the Whitaker Dricus podcast, because I was on that, I was the only one that had Dricus. And I was the only one that had Dricus at RotoWire. So that was the first time I did not go with Whitaker. And I've taken Dricus in all of his fights, but that's whatever at this point. Whitaker is still only 33. He still has plenty in the tank. He's still technically in his prime. Dricus comes at you with a shit ton of pressure and wild strikes, and it's a very unorthodox fighting style that most people struggle with. Even Sean Strickland, who is very defensive and technical, had problems with it. So I'm not going to hold that against Whitaker here. Costa, his injuries, the fight against Rockhold, he's got so much going against him. There's just no way in hell that I would trust him in this fight. His only shot is that knockout, and I honestly don't think he even gets close. If you go watch the fight, Whitaker Vettori and Costa Vettori, it's a night and day difference in how, you know, the two fought each other. Whitaker is much, much better than Vettori when it comes to striking. I don't know how Costa gets in there.
Yeah, no, he definitely has the range game. I just don't know. I just don't know if he can find it anymore. It's another one of these things where he's going to have to show it to me, because I mean, I know it's hard for me to convince Drake, and I guess most people now, because he's the champion, that Drake's pressure thing is not more than like Drake is just being awesome. But I just think, you know, what I will say is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Drake, but I don't think even you had the knockout coming. I don't think many people saw, even if you were picking Drake's. I don't think any but people saw the knockout coming. And that's kind of what worries me, is that we didn't really see that in and out Whitaker. We didn't really see that range management all that well. Yes, he you know, he put it on Sean Strickland, and Strickland's good at defense too.
Chris, did you think Drinkus won that fight? Did you think he won the fight?
Did I think he – I have to remember – no, I gave it to Strickland 3-2.
Yeah, so did I.
I didn't really say much about it, because it wasn't a robbery. It was close enough where
I would agree with that.
You can't
as well.
Complain who you're going to give it to, but yeah. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that if Costa fights the way he can, let's say the way he fought Yoel Romero, for example, I don't really think Whitaker will be able to stand up to that, but. We shall see. There's certainly a lot of question marks there. And that brings us to the main event. It is Alexander Volkanovski to retain his featherweight title at 8,200, taking on Ilya Topuria at 8,000. The line on this fight, Volkanovski -130, Topuria +110. And I kind of alluded to it in the open, but it was not long ago where we were crowning the city kickboxing guys and Volkanovski specifically as these, you know, pioneers of movement and feints and, oh my God, look what they can do and look what he was able to do to Max. And now he loses a fight up a weight class to somebody who could be, you know, on the pound for pound list right now. And we're saying
on 10 days' notice.
On 10 days' notice, as Joe corrects again, which should never be left out, that he's going to lose his featherweight status, where no featherweights haven't really been able to touch him. I don't really see that. Ilya Topuria is a good boxer. He's a very good boxer. He's very good at rolling shots, but he likes to stand and throw in the pocket. And he got tagged by Josh Emmett a couple of times. He's a very tough guy, a very tough guy. We know that because he ate a flush head kick and somehow did not die while up a weight class and actually came back and won the fight against Jai Herbert, as Joe mentioned earlier. So we know how tough he is. I just think Volkanovski has too many tricks here. He's going to be the way slicker striker. He's not just going to go in there and brawl with Topuria. He's not going to let the pressure of Topuria get to him. And what would be interesting here is if Topuria tries to wrestle. That would, I think, make this fight more interesting. I think if this fight stays on the feet, I just think it's Volk's world all day. We haven't seen Topuria fight anywhere near the level of striker. As much as I love Josh Emmett, and I'm a big Josh Emmett fan, he's a guy who stands in there and relies on his power and athleticism. And if that doesn't work, if you're a little too clever for that, he's gonna get picked apart. That's what happened there. That's not Alexander Volkanovski. Alexander Volkanovski is too clever in there, too quick. He figures out his opponents and he breaks them down. He's gonna have five rounds to do it, and I think he's gonna do it. He's going to put it on Topuria here, and I think a lot of people are going to be in for a rude awakening, because I think the old man still has some tricks. And so Volkanovski all day. And I believe we start with Drake for this main event. Drake, how are you seeing this one?
Yeah, I love all the people that are flocking towards Topuria. Keep putting your money on him, because it makes the bet better for Volkanovski. Look, Topuria doesn't, you know, honestly speaking, he doesn't even deserve this shot yet. He really doesn't. His best win is his last one against Emmett, but Emmett is, you know, there's a lot of holes in his game. And then his next win before that was Mitchell, who Emmett just happened to knock out.
And so, Mitchell had a stomach virus, by the way.
That Yes, exactly. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot that Topuria has actually done. Joe mentioned it earlier. Topuria has just been running his mouth, and that's really all that he's been doing. Volkanovski, he has not lost at 145, and it's like everybody forgot about it, and I don't know why. He's beaten Holloway 3 times. He beat TKZ. He beat T-City. He beat all of these guys. He's beaten everybody. And there is absolutely no reason to think that he has lost anything. That last loss that he got knocked out in, like you said, 10 days short notice, he had no camp. He wasn't training for anything. He was literally at home drinking. Like he said, I mean, that's what he was doing. He was having he was enjoying his off time, his off time. So Volkanovski on a full fight camp against anybody, I will still take all day against anybody. And this should be, we're going to see prime Volk in the best way possible in this fight.
Yep, I agree 100%. I feel like Joe does too, but let's go to him to make sure. Joe, how you seeing this one?
Yeah, we buried the lead early on in this at the beginning of the show. And, I love Volk here. I mean, I'm with Drake. I'm going to wait to see if any late money comes in on Topuria. It even moves the line closer to even, but I plan on making, I know it's we're only in February here, so saying I'm going to make my largest straight bet of the year doesn't really, mean much, given that we're
probably not true at this point.
Yeah, given that we're in February, but I am going to make my largest straight bet of the year on this fight on Volkanovski. And look, I will fall on my sword if this doesn't work out for me. I always have, so I will take the heat. If he doesn't, we're not charging you anything for this, so I won't feel too bad. But I do like Volkanovski a lot, and I really think he's a great value and a great bet and an excellent parlay piece, and we can segue into hot takes.
Yep, we can. That is the fight card. It is unanimous in the main event, and it is now time for hot takes. If you don't know how this works, we take something that is a juicy price, whether it be a parlay or a straight pick, that has, we think, reasonable chance of coming in more than the odds say, and we give it to you as our hot take. If you're in chat and you have a hot take, put it down there. I will put it on the screen, and we will read it and talk about it and see if we like it on the show. But first, I'm going to kick it to these guys. Does anybody have a hot take?
I do, Chris. I'm going to give you two because I know that the first one I'm going to give you is not very sexy. It's essentially a parlay with Volkanovski, Merab, and Fluffy Hernandez. You could juice that up a little by adding Barlow. I like that as well. With the three that I called out, if you're getting 5-2, if you use the boost, you could get it up to 3-1. Again, if you could add Barlow, you could get a little bit more value. If you want the odds part, if you want the odds parlay, the juicy odds parlay, let's go with Joey's pick of Neil and tie that up with my pick of Val Woodburn. And that's going to pay 9-1. So you could parlay those two guys together and get 9-1. I would not bet the house on it, but if you're looking for something high flyer type parlay, 9-1, play that. Otherwise, again, to recap, it's Volkanovski, it's Merab, and it's Fluffy. That's my primary. And then I would add Barlow to that if you want to get a little bit more leverage, juice it up a bit, or play it as a separate parlay. Do a 3-4 round robin, something like that. Those are my two takes.
All right. Drake, how about you? You got a hot take ready to go?
Yeah, I got a couple of them. So my first one is just going to be a little 3-piece parlay. It's got Volk, it's got Lamos, and it's got Maverick. Pays almost 4-1. It's three picks that I'm really confident in. And the other one is it's more of a long shot. It's actually going to be Zhang by first round sub, which pays about 8 or 9-1.
Wow. Yeah. No, that would be good. But you can definitely see it in the chaos, especially. Maybe a little club and sub, or who knows what we got going on. I'm gonna be a little pikerish next to these guys. I am gonna go with one that I do believe in that is also pretty decent money. That is Jeff Neal by KOTKO at +310. I just think these guys are gonna be exchanging a lot, and I like Jeff Neal's speed and his technique a little more. And I really think that's a good one at that price. So +310 and Jeff Neal for the knockout. And I don't see anything in chat currently, but going once, going twice, everybody in there. Hot take, we'll put it on the show. going once, going twice. Joe, I appreciate the endorsement, my friend, on the Jeff Neal pick. Going once, going twice. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for the Fight IQ podcast for UFC 298. Thank you so much, everybody, for hanging out. Thank you, Joe, for hanging out. We will definitely get you on the pod soon. Drake, Joe, you guys, anything you guys want to plug? Promote?
Well, we'll be back for 299. I'm only on Twitter, at Sun Tzu. Always happy to talk fights. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I really appreciate the growth of the space on Twitter. Honestly, I love the content. It's non-betting content that Nina Drama does. I think she's hilarious and hotter than balls. I love the number of women that are now involved, you know, in MMA as fans. Again, at Sun Tzu, feel free to reach out. I don't beg for follows. I don't need to monetize my Twitter. So, we'll be back for 299. Try to cook up something special for 300. Not sure if I could make it out to Vegas for that, but, you know, maybe if I win one of these contests that DraftKings has in their Rainmakers program, I'll be out there for that. But otherwise, probably not. That's it. Peace.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Drake, anything you want to plug? Anything you want to say?
Nope. Like we mentioned earlier in the show, you can find me and Joey for every fight event on YouTube. It's Time UFC Picks on YouTube. It's Time Picks on, you know, Facebook. We love doing this stuff, and I can't wait for the next card.
Absolutely. And we do have a late entry in, which I will allow. Is Kapilov by round 3 KO, which would certainly fit his pattern in the past.
I could see it.
Could definitely see it.
I mean, I love Fluffy, but I could certainly see that happening.
Like that one, even Fayem on the other side. But yeah, I mean, and we've seen him sparked out before, and it could be the case that, you know, rushing in recklessly for the takedown, one of them just gets caught, or he does get tired, you know, so there are some avenues there. Once again, everybody, thank you so much. Good luck in all your contests this week. As Joe said, we will be back for every pay-per-view. Guys, you're killing me here. I asked before. Fluffy, round 3 submission. I like that as well. Sort of the
polar opposite. Personally, I like that outcome better. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the outcome better too. And the polar opposite pick of our last one by 0 there. So good. We got some contention in the chat. I like it.
Nice. Nice.
All right. So I'm actually going to give a little grace period here in case anybody wants to sneak in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Nice. So that is it. And as I say, we will see you on the next card. Follow all of us on Twitter. View our takes. View mine and Drake's articles on RotoWire for this card. Everybody, we are out of here. Good luck in your contest, and we will see you on the next one.
Peace.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.